So we're speaking to John Richards, who now works with Galway Bay FM and has a background in Galway Pirate Radio. Johnny, can you tell us what motivated you to get involved in the first place and what year it was when you first got involved in the Galway pirate scene?
Well, my motivation, John, was primarily to get money in my pocket. I had no job at the time back in 1984, late 84, early 85, I think it was. And at the time, it was tough. The economy was just as bad as it is today. And I was walking through Eyre Square, and I was went up Prospect Hill, and I noticed a sign saying WLS Radio in one of the buildings. And I said to myself, you know what, I think I'll have a go at this. And I went up the stairs, and I remember it was a really narrow stairs, going up three floors, and knocking on the door, and there was no answer. And I knocked again, and there was no answer again. And I knocked. And eventually, someone came to the door, who I can't remember at this stage. I think it was Steve Marshall. And I asked, you know, straight out, I says, I'm looking for a job. And the person there at the time laughed at me and said, no, we're not doing any jobs or anything like that. And so I walked away, and I went down to Eyre Square, and which was only about 100, 200 yards from the building at the time. And I said, I'm not taking no for an answer. So I went back up again. I knocked on the door again, and they told me to go away. I went back 11 times in the same day and knocked on the door. And eventually Don Stevens, who was the station manager at the time and the owner of the station, came down and said, you're very persistent. And I said, I just want to have a go at this. And I said, well, I'm looking for a job. And he says, okay. He says, I can't pay you any money. But he says, I am looking for someone to work from 12 midnight until 6 o'clock in the morning. He says, do you think you could do that? And I said, of course I can. And hadn't got a clue what I was doing or anything like that. But I was just desperate to get my foot inside the door somewhere, because I was on the dole at the time, and you know, I just wanted to be doing something. And I enjoyed talking to people, but I had no one to talk to at the time. So I figured that maybe radio could be a way to do it. So I got 2 days training in how to use the equipment at the time. And actually it was Steve Marshall who ran through all the training with me. And then they put me loose at 12 o'clock at night. And I'm so excited. And it started off at 12 o'clock, and I promptly fell asleep at about 12:30. I was so exhausted. And I didn't wake up for a while. And what woke me up was the sound of the needle bouncing off the end of the vinyl, and it's going dunk, 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 dunk.
Was this your first night?
It was my first night, yeah.
Start as you intend to continue, yeah.
Yeah, and fell asleep, and then I went back on again, and I started playing songs. And Don Stevens, at the time, was the breakfast presenter on the station, so he arrived in the morning, and he came straight into me. And I remember at the time he says, "You are absolutely the worst person I've ever heard on the radio." He says, "You have no voice. You're no good at what you do or anything, but I do need someone to run the station from 12 until 6 in the morning, and I'll give you £20 a week to do that." So that was kind of my introduction to pirate radio.
And so there was no kind of long love for radio going back into your early childhood or anything like that, or it was simply to look for a job? There was no radio connection at all, was there?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, and this conversation that we're having here today and what we had when you popped into the radio station a couple of weeks ago, I used to listen to Benny Brown on Radio Luxembourg all the time. And I used to listen two things that I used to do at home. It used to be lights out at 9 o'clock in my house when you went to bed. And I used to have an exhaustible supply of batteries for my torch so I could read underneath the covers. And I also had a little earpiece for plugging into my little handheld radio to listen to Radio Luxembourg. So yes, I enjoyed listening to the radio, and I loved the intimacy of it all, where under the covers, reading with my book, there was this voice in my head, albeit in one ear. So that was probably one of them, one of the reasons. And the second one was that I worked in a roller skating rink. And in the roller skating rink, I was one of the safety guards that basically ensured people were safe on the roller skates and policed it. But every so often, the DJs would be late. So I used to be able to go up and play some of their vinyls whilst they were getting ready or arriving at the roller skating rink. And maybe that's where I got it from as well. So I did enjoy the music. And I did enjoy playing songs, but I never spoke or anything like that. And it was only until I was completely out of work that I gravitated towards the pirate radio station in the town, not in a conscious way, maybe subconsciously I did that.
And of course, WLS was the only station in town, literally, at the time. There had been smaller stations that came and went, but for a while anyway, it had no competition. So what was the setup like there? How professional was it? What kind of a radio station was it, technically, anyway?
It was one of the better ones from what I was involved in, from the stories I've heard over the years. There was an engineer in the station who had been part of all previous stations, a man called Keith York, known to everybody as Yorkie. And Keith was pretty much a genius. He was just one of those people who could keep a radio station on the air with a ball of twine. And but the one thing that Keith York did and Don Stevens is that they did invest in reasonably good transmission gear and went to a lot of effort to acquire FM transmitters and so they could get the best signal around the town and out into the suburbs as well. So on the transmission side, the station had a pretty good radius and sounded really good. And the equipment inside, we had some very old turntables, which I can't remember the name of anymore. We had our tape decks, and that was it. And a really good microphone. Don did believe in having the best microphone possible so that the voice could travel the best through the speakers to connect with the listener. And, you know, Don Stevens was many things to many broadcasters over the years, but he did have an ability to convey some, really good advice now and again. And one of the things that he did talk about was making a connection with your listener. And there was no point in just talking to a microphone. You didn't talk to a microphone. You spoke to a person. And it was one of the best bits of advice that I got from him and from other people I worked with over the years, like Keith York, Richie O'Shea, Tony Allen was another person in there. And they all had different pearls of wisdom that they had picked up over the years when they worked with the Voice of Peace. They worked with Radio Caroline. I can't remember the radio station that was down in Cork.
ERI, South Coast Radio. They had been in South Coast Radio.
ERI, yeah. And then before WLS, there was the Atlantic Sound. And over the years, the trial and error that they had experienced, they brought expertise and experience with them that benefited people like me who came through the doors over the years. So in that respect, those people, more so Keith York and Tony Allen and Richie O'Shea, they were very influential in me learning the trade of radio back in those early years.
Indeed, there were some very big names involved. I mean, those were big names in the radio world. And if you think of Tony Allen, one of the great radio voices in Irish pirate radio in the 1980s, and you had an interesting story about Tony Allen's advice for you when we met.
Yeah, Tony, as you say, he was one of the legends in the pirate radio scene. And I remember when I was first speaking on the radio, everybody had this mid-Atlantic voice. I was one of those people. And I remember Tony taking me aside one day. And I remember it was the Apps room and sitting me down. And he said, "You need to find your voice, John." And I says, "What do you mean?" He says, "You've got to sound like you do on the radio as you would in real life." He says, "One of the best compliments that people can give you is that you sounded just like you do on the radio." And I most definitely did not, along with everybody else. And I have to say that I don't think there was any real genuine voices back then. Everybody was trying to find their voice when they were starting off in pirate radio. And over the years, you either found it or you were found out, one or the other. And I still remember it was the room, it was a dingy room, it was hot, there was tin foil everywhere, and he just said to me, "You need to find your voice." And I recently heard one of my ads and a link from that time, and only for the fact that someone told me that it was me, I didn't recognize it. And it was only when I listened to it several times I could hear some of the flavors of my natural voice coming through in certain words, where I was working too hard to sound like a jock from America, and that was not me. So the nighttime shift afforded me many opportunities to find myself. And I was doing that in WLS until the situation in there just became intolerable. Most pirate radio stations were not run very well. And WLS, whilst it had a great transmission network and some really good people, the radio station itself was run very poorly. And a lot of very good people who went into radio with, you know, great ideals and everything got disillusioned very quickly and left. And I do believe a lot of truly great broadcasters fell by the wayside over the years due to poor management and people being treated badly. I could see it happening to myself. So I took the initiative and I left the radio station. I remember walking out and down the stairs and I said, what am I going to do? So I contacted a gentleman called Ben and Tierney, who was operating County Sound Radio in Tuam at the time. And he had expressed interest in me and said, like, you know, if you're ever thinking of anything like that, like, you know, maybe this might be an opportunity for you. So
had he heard you on the overnight shift?
He had heard me in the overnight shift at the time. And so he had said to me, listen, there might be an opportunity down here in June for you. He says, I've got a weekend shift, breakfast shift that I need filling. And he says, you're welcome to have a go at that. And I said, you know what? Sign me up. I'll have a go at that. I says, when do you want me to start? He says, can you start this Saturday morning? And I said, I'll be there. So I had no transport at the time or anything like that. And I had organized a friend of mine to give me a lift down on that Saturday morning. So I think I was due to start at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm one of those people, I hate being late. It's something ingrained into me. Do not be late. And so I was up 3 hours before I was to go down to Tuam, ready, prepped, the whole lot, and to find out that my lift had let me down. And this was about 5 o'clock in the morning that this person who was bringing me just could not fulfill what they were going to do for me. And
very generous person to be offering you a lift at that time anyway, I think.
Yeah, like, you know, and it wasn't a case where they slept out or anything like that. Something they worked in a job and something came up in their job and they had to go along and do that. And that was their source of income. So I was low down the pecking order.
Yes.
So I had a push bike in the house I lived in at the time. And I think I lived in Lower Salt Hill at the time. And I got on the push bike. And I started cycling to Tuam.
30 kilometers. It's a long way.
30 kilometers. Yeah, long way. So on the morning when I left, I got to the top of Bohemore Roundabout. Now, for anybody who knows Galway, they know that Bohemore Roundabout at the time was the last part of civilization before you left Galway back in that time. And it was the foggiest morning ever. So I couldn't see 10 feet in front of me. And I just kept cycling. If the fog had lifted, I think I might have despaired and turned back. But then again, I'm one of those people that I probably wouldn't have. But knowing that I couldn't see how far ahead of me helped with the fog down. So I kept cycling and I got to Tuam. And I got there about 10 minutes before I started the breakfast show and did the show. And did it standing up because my arse is so sore at the time. And I've never stood up again since. I'm not one of those jocks that likes to stand. I like to sit. And did the show. And afterwards, Benin came in and said, listen, he says, we that was really good and really liked you. And he says, would you like to come and down and work here for us?
So that was your first show. Your first show you almost missed.
First show I almost missed. Yeah. And he said, you know, I can give you a job here in Tuam. He says, you can work Monday to Friday. And so I literally up sticks, left Galway and moved down to Tuam straight away. And that was like moving to a different country.
And what was the setup like in County Sound? Because it was a county station to begin with, and then it moved into the city. But obviously you were there when it was still based in Tuam. So what kind of a station was it?
County Sound was the first location that I was in. It was a place called the Mall in Tuam. And Ben and Tierney, along with his two partners, Pat Gleason and Joe Gavin, were very serious operators. They believed in doing the best that they could. If you thought that the transmission network that Keith York had installed in Galway, what Benin and Pat and Joe did for the county surpassed it by light years. And they took it very seriously. And they went to the trouble of building studios as best as possible with the best soundproofing that they could afford at the time. So whereas WLS is more open plan, County Sound was a big open room, to the best of my knowledge, and partitioned, and the usual glass, double glass that they put in to try and minimize the sounds in the building. All the shows were programmed by Benin, and everybody was given an identity for those shows, and of course with the pirated jingles that we had at the time from County Sound, and they had their own news service. And a girl called Mary, I think it was Mary that did the news at the time. So Benin and Pat and Joe put a lot of effort into creating a station that was to be proud of for the county area. Benin was the main salesman. And Benin, like for anybody who knows Benin Tierney, Benin was a really good salesman. And he was one of those people that when he committed to something, he did it, and that was it. And one of the attractions of working for County Sound was that he gave an undertaking that the wages would be paid every week, and there would never be a second time asked, where's my money? And that never, ever happened in County Sound. Pat and Joe and Benin, even when things were difficult, and they were difficult in pirate radio, as you know, John, and there was lots of stories told to fob people off. Every single week, without fail, the wages were there, paid by Ben and Pat and Joe. And it was one of the great attractions and gave me a sense of, oh, well, here's respect. And I gave that respect back to them. What happened with County Sound is that County Sound started to outgrow Tuam, and they made a decision to move the station to Galway. And they acquired premises at the top of Prospect Hill, which was just up from WLS.
Which was then known as Coast 103, of course, at that stage.
Yeah, Coast 103, that's right, Coast 103. They had name changed themselves at that stage. And we were just up the road from them. So we became, in effect, the direct competition for Coast 103. But the attraction that we had was that we had a county audience and city audience. Because the transmission network that Joe installed to keep it going was really excellent, and the signal strength was fantastic all over. So Benin then went out of hammer and tongs in Galway, and we converted the entire, it was the third floor of Western House, and studios were built. There were two studios. Again, they put the same effort into putting as much soundproofing in as possible. The new service ran from there, and the station ran live 24 hours. I went back into working 12 to 6 in the midnight shift, and I loved it. And if one of the sad things that's happened in radio today is that the importance of a radio station that is there at night to comfort and communicate and to be there for listeners is gone.
It's all gone.
It's all gone. Yeah. And it is one of the greatest crimes that's ever been perpetrated across the radio industry that radio stations are not live through the night. There's an audience there for it, and I loved it. I loved working from 12 until 6 in the morning.
And we heard your voice on ads as well from some of the archive recordings. So obviously you were recording, you were voicing ads as well as doing presentation. Did you have any other duties, or was that it?
That was pretty much it in my pirate days. You just reminded me there now of making ads. Like music beds for ads was always a problem. And I do remember Yorkie used to have these great vinyl albums of ad music beds, and he used to keep them under lock and key. And if you ever got a chance to record them onto a cassette, it was like getting one of the great treasures. And that did happen. But most times the music beds that we used for making the ads were the instrumentals of 12-inch songs. And we used to just record them in and hope that the vocal didn't come in or didn't ruin it anywhere. So no such thing as copyright back then. And then all the ads were played off cassette tapes.
There were no carts in County Sound either, despite the investment in studio equipment. You were still operating from cassettes.
Yeah, from the cassettes. And one of the jobs as a newsreader was to queue up all the cassettes for every ad break. So they would come in and they'd hand you 5 or 6 cassettes, and they were all set up to go for whatever ad break you were to play. That was one of the duties of the newsreader back then. I have forgotten all that now, just talking about that.
Very good.
And but getting back to the nighttime, when I used to do nighttime, there were two stories that really stuck in my mind. Is that about 3 o'clock in the morning, I used to stick on a classic album of the time, and I'd always find the longest tracks possible. And I used to run down the hill from Prospect Hill around the corner to a bakery called Lydon's Bakery. There was a baker in there called by the name of Arthur. And myself and Arthur used to sit down and have the freshest bread or scones that came out of the oven at 3 o'clock in the morning with a cup of coffee. And I'd be listening to the radio to make sure that the needle didn't get stuck. And then I'd run back up the hill again and continue on with the rest of the show until 6 o'clock in the morning. And then back then, the live music scene where musicians from all over the country would be traveling and coming back to Galway, Johnny Carroll, the man with the golden trumpet, always listened to me. And he would always pick up a snack box from Supermax for me and drop it into me at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning as he was coming back to Galway from whatever gig. So he could be traveling back from anywhere, Donegal, Sligo, Cork, anywhere, but he always popped into me. And I loved that connection with people. And if I ever get the chance to work in a radio station from 12 midnight to 6 in the morning, if somebody was doing it, I would drop everything I'm doing and go back to it again. Because one of the things that happened with radio is that part of the commercialization of radio, you lost the vitality and the immediacy and the connectivity of talking to a person. And a lot of radio today, not all of it, but a lot of it has been homogenized, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, and has become so slick and polished and devoid of life that the essence of pirate radio has been lost over the years.
So you really felt that you had a connection with the audience then. It's very strong coming out there, Johnny. Were you aware of the support for these stations in the city, I mean, particularly County Sound? Like, would you hear it in shops? Would people recognize your voice? I mean, you had found your voice at that stage.
Definitely. And there was nothing, it was a very satisfying to hear somebody saying, I listened to you last night. I loved what you talked about. That song was fantastic. And it also did a lot for me because it gave me a social outlet and it allowed me to connect with people and to have something in common. And I loved that part of radio. And it's something that I've refused to let go over the years, and I've been worked with many different program directors over the years, and a lot of them try to stamp out your personality and become just a cog in the wheel of the radio station. And I do believe that there is a reason for ground rules and everything, but the personality and the essence of who you are should never be lost. And that's what people connect with, because ultimately most radio stations play the same music and they're basically the same outbreaks and everything. So what you can inject of yourself to connect with people is more important than anything. And when I'm training people now, I try to get that across them. And we have students that come in here to Galway BFM a lot. And I try this test them every time. I have a stand-up microphone in the middle of the room. And they're all asking me the questions. And I ask this question and I say, what's that there? And inevitably, they all stick up their hands. It's a microphone. And they all go, yeah, it's a microphone. And I say, no, it's not. It's a person. That is someone that you are talking to, someone that you're having a conversation with, somebody that you are connecting with. That is only a way, a conduit for you to get to that person. It's not a microphone. It's whoever you want it to be. And I think the broadcaster that loses that connection, again, like the part of the voice we talked earlier on, will be found out very, very quickly. And that's one of the things that I hope I have not lost over the years or hasn't been stamped out of me. And I think that's part of the reason that there are no great names coming through at the moment on radio. There are no household names coming through. There's nobody that people say, oh, I must listen to that person. I must not miss what they're doing. I think that's gone. I think that's been lost at the moment. I think it can be refound, but I think radio stations need to re-examine themselves and ask themselves, why are we really here? there's a lot of reasons. If they're commercial, of course, they have to honor paying the wages and paying the bills and all of that. But why are you really, really there? You're there to talk to another person. You're there to share, to connect, and and form a bond. And that's something that's missing in radio today. The bond between the broadcaster and the listener has been lost. I don't think it's been lost forever. I think it can be found again. And I hope I'm part of that when it does happen.